I go around and contact hot rod pioneers, guys who are in their, you know, the latter part of their lives, guys in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, and I do filmed interviews with them. And they're usually two to 2.5 hour interviews. And you can go on the American Hot Rod Foundation website, which I think is ahrf.com. And there's a great, you can click on the banner that says Pioneers. And there's just a huge directory of a few hundred pioneers that they've interviewed since, I think, 2002, which is when they started this work. Might have been a year earlier than that, but anyway, right in there. And you can just click on a name. I mean, whoever you're a fan of, whether it's Tommy Ivo or Don Garlitz or, you know, Fred Carrillo or anybody. And
yeah,
they have half minutes and 1 minute clips of these guys talking. And you know, it's a bittersweet project to be involved in. Just because, you know, they are our World War II generation, basically, and we're, you know, the math is working against them. I mean, we're losing mm-hmm. these guys all the time. And last year,
well, it makes it doubly important that somebody like you is involved in that, and the rest of us can appreciate it, because once that work is done, once you have made it possible for guys like me and guys like the folks that are listening to go to that website and see that, you've done the work, man. You've allowed us a glimpse into the living history, and it's noble work, and I respect you for it, and thank you for doing that on my behalf and everyone else's, as well as anybody else that's involved with the Hot Rod Foundation. I think it's great stuff, dude.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I mean, I'd be doing it no matter what, you know. I'm fascinated by those guys and what they accomplished with really just brawn and just crazy amounts of bravery and determination.
Sheer will.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very rare that I ever interview one of these guys and get their story and find out that they had some kind of assistance, you know, when they were young. I mean, these kids were, you know, depression-era kids, you know, who went straight from that into World War II, for God's sake, you know. I mean,
yep. It's
truly amazing. I mean, but if we want to thank someone, we really need to thank, again, Steve Mimishian, who really pours his heart and soul into this thing, and, you know, his bank account. I mean, he funds the thing. It's that important to him. And, you know, again, it's a not-for-profit. This thing is not, it's not like the American Hot Rod Foundation is being, you know, built into a brand or anything. It just is this quiet thing that chugs along and I think does a really great service for the hobby, because it captures these stories while we still can. And then you have Jim Miller, who works basically full-time, you know, scanning these old photo collections and organizing things, labeling these photos, getting the real stories of what we're looking at and what really happened. And if he doesn't know the answer to something, he'll say, "I don't know yet, but we're going to find out."
Yeah.
And that's the kind of guy you want, because, you know, a lot of stuff gets passed around down through the years and things can get very foggy, but I love that about the foundation, that it's approached in an almost scientific way. Like, if we don't know, we're not going to say, but we'll let you know when we do, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I think I told you this earlier in an email. I spent the afternoon with Edith Gandarian and Nick Arians and John Athen and Leslie Long. And I drove down and had lunch with these guys, and it's just a dream come true. I mean, to be able to, you know, I had a flathead here that I was playing with, and I had a running problem with it, and I couldn't seem to tune out the gremlin that was in this engine, and I had some questions, some valve train angle questions and stuff, and I thought, well, geez, I should just call Iski because I know him, you know? I mean, it's completely insane. I mean, it would be like having a question about blues guitar and going, well, geez, I should just call Clapton, I guess, you know?
I guess,
And you're able to, you know? I mean, the guy's still active and sharp as a tack, and he'll take your phone call, and he'll talk to you about it and walk you through it, and you realize, my God, this guy is one of the truly premier pioneers. I mean, he is a treasure to our hobby. And what a different landscape we'd have if not for Ed Iskandarian. I mean, just the color and personality that is Iski combined with his engineering genius. I mean, a guy who came up with Ed Winfield and learned everything from him, and he's a direct descendant of Winfield. I mean, it's crazy that you can even sit down and talk with him. But, you know, and John Athen was in the booth, too, you know, with us at lunch. This is 93. John Athen is 95.
Wow.
And John Athen, by the way, we really feel like we've nailed this down at the American Hot Rod Foundation. And to me, this is a very important thing when it, as far as hot rodding, traditional hot rodding is concerned, and just the way that a traditional hot rod roadster looks to us when we think of that look and that silhouette. In 1936, John Athen put a 29 Model A roadster body on a 32 frame. And as far as we know, he was the very first guy that ever did that.
Hmm.
And that's
the hot rod. That is it.
That's the high boy roadster.
Yep.
You know, I mean, many, many important roadsters and famous roadsters were just 32 high boys. But the real hot ticket was, I mean, and the guys by the early 40s, everybody kind of figured this out, was the rigidity of the 32 frame that had the 32 K member in it that was set up for a V8. So you didn't have to fabricate motor mounts and all that stuff. It was a bolt-in drivetrain, but then the lightweight of the 28-29 Model A Roadster body, fantastic combination, and guys are still building those all the time, every day, you know? And I'm literally sitting there talking to the guy that did that, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, the quote is, if you want to go fast, you have to build in some lightness. I can't remember who said that, but I read that just recently, and it's from one of the founding fathers of hot rodding, and that's what high boy body is on the 32 chest. That's it, you know.
It was certainly Colin Chapman's theory too, but I mean that's the secret to going fast, you know. I mean, in addition to horsepower and aerodynamics and all that stuff, but
yeah, for sure.
Anyway, well, I mean that's a real thrill. For me to be able to know those guys and talk to those guys and be in touch with history, it's really great.
Yeah, very cool stuff. Well, thanks for keeping on with that work, David, too. And by the way, for you guys listening, we're talking with David Steele, who is a dyed-in-the-wool hot rod guy, as well as an outstanding musician and, proud to say, a good friend. So if you ever cross paths with Dave, it's a great conversation to have. But let me ask you something else, David. You've got Tom Sparks' truck, arguably an iconic hot rod. What else do you drive? Have you still got your Chevelle?
I'll always have my Chevelle.
was your first car, wasn't it?
It's my first car. Yeah, I bought it when I was 17.
1972, yes?
71, yeah.
71, okay. I get the front end is virtually the same. But I'll never forget in Nashville when you took me for a rip around the block in that sucker. And for you guys that don't know the car, it's got torque thrust wheels on it. It's a black-on-black car. It's a semi-gloss black, hot rod black finish in a built big block that will just – it will – tear the nose hair out of your face. It's just will throw you back in the seat. It was a thrill ride, man. I still smile when I think about that.
Oh, that's nice of you, because I know you drive stuff at least that fast and faster on a regular basis. But, you know, the thing I'll say about my Chevelle is, and this kind of speaks to my, I mean, this is why my nickname is Old School Dave. It's old technology. You know, it's down and dirty, smelly, old technology. It's compression, big chem, big, you know, leaking Holley carburetor, you know, the whole thing, and on bias plies with original suspension. So it really, it ups the fear, you know, the fear level substantially when you're dealing with the original brakes and all that stuff. But I like that. I mean, that's why I, you know, pour crazy stupid money into building 30s and 40s style, you know, dry lakes Aviate roadsters, or I should say, that's why I have been trying to build one of those cars now for many years. And, you know, it's like my drag racing buddies will say to me, man, how much money are you going to have in that flathead when it's done? And I tell them, and they just go, man, oh man, and how much horsepower will it make? And and I say, well, about 180.
Yeah, which is, by the way, that's very impressive out of a flatty. That's nice power out of a flathead.
It is, but, you know, a good, strong, you know, Merc cranked 59A with a good cam and heads and everything in good tune, 297s and all that, that's about what it should make in top tune. But to me, it's about the experience. You know, I want to experience what those guys experienced. And I feel that way about my Chevelle, you know. As much as it's changed cosmetically, because it was a Placer gold car with black stripes originally, and that's how it looked when I drove it to high school, it still feels and smells like my car, you know, the car I've had my whole life. And I just kind of want it to always be that way. I like how rude it is, and it's got a really rough idle and sets off car alarms, and it, you know, it makes, 530 horsepower on pump gas, and it's just a riot, you know, it's like driving in the rain all the time, you know. So to me, it's what a muscle car, you know, it should be for me. You know, I know that people upgrade them these days, and that's great too. But there's just something about, like, this is what one would have been like in like 1976 if the guy worked at the local speed shop, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But yeah, I love the thing. I'll never ever sell it. It's great.
Very cool. Well, I want to share something with you and everybody else that's listening. I've done it, David. I've cracked the code. There's been this question out in the universe. What is the connection between rock and roll and hot rods? What is the connection? And there's theories, there's debates, there's blogs, there's books, there's songs written about it. Of course, hundreds of songs. And I want to tell you that I've figured it out. And, you know, I'm not setting it up for a joke, but I was thinking about this a lot today. And I want your opinion on this after I've done spewing my faux knowledge here. When you're experiencing a song, whether it's being sucked into it with a pair of headphones on or playing it live on stage, there's only one place that you can possibly be, and that is in the moment. You know, forgive me for getting all zen and all metaphysical and all that kind of stuff, but the only time that we ever have is the here and now. We don't have yesterday anymore, and tomorrow hasn't happened yet. So when you're absorbed in music, I know this because, you know, I spent 10 years on the road and I still dabble in music. And when you're absorbed in it, when you're in it, you have no choice but to be in the moment. And now when I take myself back to when I remember recent experiences like blocking out a panel or banging through the gears on an eighth mile or quarter mile strip, if you're not in the moment, you're not in it. You have to be absorbed into it. So they share that commonality. Those two experiences, you have to be present for them. So that's my theory. What do you think about that?
Man, I think that's spot on. I couldn't have said it anywhere near that good, but that's exactly how I feel about it. I love that. I mean, and please, go crazy. Get all zen about it. I mean, you know, I find myself when I talk about it just, you know, rambling on like crazy in a silly and romantic way. But, you know, they are two things that I love so much. And I enjoy talking about them because they're infinitely fascinating to me. because it's a thing that you're always chasing. You know, it never.
Yeah, and you're chasing the rush of being in the moment.
That certainly, but there's also, as resolved as some things can seem to be at times, there's a real lack of resolution for me, I told you I wasn't going to be able to articulate this, but I mean, that's how music feels to me. It's like when people talk about Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, you know, spending so much crazy time on a track and just trying everything in the world and man, isn't that crazy? I think, well, no, that's not crazy at all, because the possibilities are infinite.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's like that with any art form. And, you know, to me, yeah, the tie-in is really, you know, it's youth-based. I feel like, you know, rock and roll music, blues music, roots music, any kind of music that is really authentic, you know, or has kind of the mark of its maker all over it. It'll always have a kind of youthful spirit about it, because it's kind of like, you know, it's very expressive in a reckless way. And I feel like hot rodding is that way too. It's very expressive in this kind of reckless way. It's got a feeling of danger about it. But, you know, with any art form, again, it's like, there's a thing about it, as much as you think you understand it, it'll make you chase it.
Yeah.
It'll make you keep coming back. And I love that about both of those things. And I have absolutely no problem calling any part of the hot rodding world an art form, because it is. And man, I mean, I think some of the stuff that guys are doing, you know, with the, I mean, just as an example, just because I'm close to this world, this is kind of where I swim out here. You know, there was kind of a faux patina thing that happened, and that's all cool. But as we've kind of come out of that, as far as talking about traditional hot rodding, there's something about what these guys are now doing that I'm seeing, the guys in Burbank, guys in Pasadena, North Hollywood. There are guys who are building these old hot rods, and they are using, and like hand-picking these beautifully patinaed old
mm-hmm.
original parts. And,
yeah.
And they're mating them to other patinaed old original parts that have a harmony to them.
Yeah.
The combination
yeah.
has this great harmony, and when the car's all together, it looks and feels like something that truly has been together for 60, 70 years. I mean, this guy, Bobby Green, who does the old Crow Speed Shop in Burbank, there's another guy, Marion Bledsoe, who really just has a great feel for that stuff, and they build these cars that just have there's something so human about them. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's like an old hammer, you know?
Yeah.
That just is so worn in, and you just get a sense of the guy who used it. And
yeah.
I think, you know, I look at old guitars that are all worn down and played in, and I get the same feeling, you know, about them. I mean,
you can pay $8,000-$10,000 to Fender or Gibson's custom shops and get a patinaed guitar. They call it a relic guitar, for those guys that don't know. And I liked the art form and kind of the expression and the how-to of creating fotina, if you will. But it's nice to know that that whole push for trying to recreate patina has maybe brought people's attention towards what real patina is, and maybe elevated or lifted that part of the hobby a little bit. What do you think?
Oh, I think absolutely. I when I started seeing that movement happening, I thought, well, there you go. Now we're
mm-hmm.
talking. I mean, because again, the faux patina thing is beautiful, and that's an art form, no doubt about it. But there's something about a piece that has been truly weathering since the 30s or 40s or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That alone is a cool thing to find. You find that thing and you know, it's that saying in hot rodding, like, oh man, I'd build a car around that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That thing is so cool.
I've got these distinct memories of in my Uncle Herb's wrecking yard with stacks of old Studebakers. And I remember particularly right now, I'm closing my eyes thinking about a 48 Chevy pickup that was a tow truck cab. And it was this blue color that with the primer was showing through the hood. And on the peak of the hood by the hood ornament was surface rust. And I used to, when I was just a little kid, drive my Hot Wheels cars on the top of that hood because the tires would make this cool squealing sound and it would echo because there was no engine in between the fenders. And that resonates with me. You know what I mean? It's this memory that bubbles to the top when I see a truck of that body style or a car or something with that particular look to it. So that's why it's attractive to me, is because it brings me back there for a moment.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, that cracks open a whole, you know, whole thing of, like, I love, one of my favorite things about driving my Chevelle is inevitably when I stop to put gas in it, some guy will come up to me.
Yep.
And he'll just, before he even starts talking, you know what's coming.
Uh-huh.
He's got that look on his...
just like it.
Yeah, well, or something. He's got a connection to that car.
Yep.
And he hasn't seen or heard one like that in a while. And he's got that look on his face like, oh, man. And you'll get something like, I had one of these, and my uncle had one just like this, and I'll never forget it. He would take me for a drive around the lake or through town or whatever it is. Or my friend in high school had one of these, and it was the baddest thing. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. The very idea that vehicle can be a vehicle for pulling out, mining those memories and those emotions.
David, but it's an instant kindred spirit with somebody that you've never seen before in your life. And that, to me, is a great part of humanity. So if nothing else, all these old cars bring us together as human beings. So it's a great thing, man.
Oh, man. Yeah, you said it. I mean, you get into this emotionally charged conversation with a complete stranger, and you're finishing each other's sentences. I mean, that's like like-minded on another level or something.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, you know, it's a funny thing. I just thought of this for some reason, and I love it. I love this, and I wish I had him on tape saying it, because I know that my dad articulated this in a tighter, cleaner way than I ever can. But my dad used to say this thing about cars, and he would usually say it when you were up against the wall on some kind of tuning problem or something like that. And he would just say, well, you know, it's just the same thing that we are. You know, it's just a mechanical thing. But
we're
made out of the same stuff. It has an electrical charge.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really an air pump is all it is. It's just a pump.
Yeah.
And it takes in fuel, and it produces all this power and energy. And you have to think of, well, when you're under the weather or you've run yourself down, you know, think back to why that happened and how that happened. And then you translate that into the car. At the time I took it as a very kind of literal thing, like, oh, he's trying to make me understand the car and how a car works. And here you can relate to it this way. But over the years it became more of an emotional thing to me. Like, that, maybe that's why we have this kind of, you know, visceral reaction to the sound, or better yet, the feel of a car that is so dialed in, so well done, so ready to go, so eager. Maybe there is some kind of weird connection, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've clearly taken you out from under the gun on your Zen thing earlier, because now I'm really spinning off the track.
No, but. This is fascinating. This is neat stuff. Yeah, truly, if you get down to a microscopic and a molecular level, we're all just atoms and energy anyways, you know, same as the cars and stuff. So, I don't know. People name their cars. They call them he or she. We, on the TV shows that I do, we give our projects names. And my little Mustang is named Jaded, and that's because she's pissed off and jaded. I think what your dad maybe was trying to do was basically kind of getting you tuned into to diagnostics and trying to analogize things, which is fantastic, and that's what I got from it. And it's really neat that you hold on to that and take it to a deeper level, on more of a spiritual level almost. It's cool.
Well, you know, I mean, you can understand this, I know, because you're a musician. Your brain, your whatever, you will just go there, you know, once you start working that muscle in your life and kind of using your emotions to your benefit and channeling them into something you're creating, which again, car guys do that all the time. That's what builders are doing all the time. They're sculptors,
yeah.
And they're great visionaries, and but the music thing, I think it's churned up so much of that stuff for me that you know, I probably, you know, have a little bit more of that, you know, showing on my sleeve than some car guys. But, you know, it's an emotionally artistic thing for me, and I love that about it, because again, it makes it infinitely fascinating. You know, I'll never be bored with any of it. You know, just like I'll never be bored with music.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for you and me, David, I think the question of what are we going to, you and I are both about the same age. So the question of what are we going to do when we grow up? It's pure academics at this point. We pretty much know that in the first place we're not. And in the second place, our career paths are just sort of set, but with some fun things to come, surely. But I wanted to ask you, with all that you've done, your fantastic tenure with unbelievably great artists, and you at one of them, and as well as this really neat aspect of the hot rodding world that you've become a part of. What's next for David Steele?
Well, what's next for David Steele? I, you know, really,
or is it just continuing on with this awesome life that you've created for yourself?
Well, that's nice of you. I can't complain. That's for sure. I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches, you know, what I've been able to get away with. It's just crazy. But, you know, I moved to California. It'll be 2 years in March that I was then out here. And I just, the whole thing with moving to California was really just to take what I'd always been doing, which was playing music for a living, playing with my cars, being involved in the car hobby, being involved in the music world, and trying to take that to the next level. And maybe it was, maybe a cheap and easy way to do it, to just go where it's kind of happening more than it's happening anywhere else, as far as the car thing, because it's such a huge part of the culture here, and the car community is literally overwhelming. I mean, it's, the events are just unbelievable, and it's you could never exaggerate it, you know. I mean, you know.
Well, and for music, you've got to be where the business is, period. A wise man told me that a long time ago when I was banging out cover songs in clubs in Western Canada. He said, what are you doing here? Go somewhere where the business is. And he was right. So you are that. You were doing that.
And, well, and you did that. You came to L.A., you know.
Star.
And it... Well, yeah, I mean, and it's a tough place, man. It's overwhelming. I mean, I won't kid you. It's a lot. It's a lot. But, you know, as much challenge as there is here, there's an equal upside, you know. I mean, when it pays off, it pays off big, and not in super crazy grand ways. I mean, just in that, you know, I had really no, you know, the music thing was never really lacking for me in Nashville. There's plenty of music in Nashville. But there's a certain kind of music that's made out here that there wasn't much of there. So I guess that, I guess there was a little something missing for me. But, of course, that's kind of not, that's changed a bit in Nashville now. But anyway, the car hobby thing, I was coming out here all the time, you know, going to car events and car events and car events because I really do love the traditional hot rodding thing. And there really was not much of that going on in Tennessee. And, you know, all of the guys I was getting to know who were building cars like I was building, you know, flathead powered Ford based, you know, traditional hot rods, 40s and 30s style, early 50s maybe. And stuff seemed to all be kind of happening here, or a lot of it anyway. And so really what's next for me is just to make more and more sense out of living in California and play more and more music and get deeper into the car thing. And, you know, so far so good. My lights are on and I stay very busy and I get to do this stuff with the foundation, which is such a joy. And when I go to, you know, a traditional hot rod event, you know, it's literally with, you know, some of my biggest heroes. I mean, guys that I've admired my whole life and they are the community and it's really, really fun. It's really fun.
Perfect, perfect. Well, listen, before we sign off, is there anybody that you'd like to acknowledge or somebody you'd like to thank or shout out or anything like that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I'd really like to thank the Sparks family for making my move to California possible because one of the things I do out here is I spend time at their property, Tom's old house, and I sort through the estate and help them with things, placing the old, you know, the cars from the collection and the memorabilia, automobilia and stuff. And, you know, they've really, you know, Jenny and Barbara Sparks are just wonderful people, just like their parents were. And, you know, when I was coming out here and paddling around with Tom, I didn't see them that much. I didn't know them. They have, you know, lives of their own and they live a little ways outside of town. So getting to know them and getting to kind of have this California family, because I had this great relationship with their parents has been such a blessing because it's just a continuation of that thing, which I do miss, but what a wonderful thing to be able to come out here and spend time with them and get to know them better. And,
yeah.
They've helped me a ton and have really made this possible. So that's big, you know, that's really big. And,
yeah. And they sound like wonderful folks, man.
They're awesome. You know, they're just fantastic. They're like the sisters I never had, you know, so it's really nice.
Very good. Very good. Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us and share of your experiences. And I just want to say out loud, I'm can't wait to see what's coming down the pike for you musically. You owe me a ride in the Tom Sparks truck, and I will give you a ride in the Jaded Mustang, and we will grin from ear to ear. And thank you so much for everything, and I'm proud to call you a friend.
Well, likewise, Kevin. Absolutely. You are one of my favorite people of all time. I really mean that. You are a gem and a half. You're awesome. So I look forward to seeing you, and it's a great honor to be on the show. I appreciate you asking me to do this.
Well, we all thank you very much. People, you're listening to Shop Talk. We're talking with David Steele, car guy, rock and roll, guitar hero, blues cat. I could go on and on and on. Go and see this guy play live. You will have your face ripped off. And, you know, I don't know. It, very cool thing to be a shadow in your world, Dave.
Oh, my God. You're the best PR guy I've ever had.
All right. You're listening to Shop Talk, brought to you by the Eastwood Company. Do the job right with Eastwood. David Steele is now living in Southern California and has found a home in the center of both the hot rod world and the music industry, and continues to exercise his passions on both fronts. And we're looking forward to seeing where Dave's name will pop up in both of the media worlds. If you have the chance, log on to the American Hot Rod Foundation and take a look at some of the archives. If you've got any suggestions or comments about Shop Talk, drop us a line and we'll take a look and, who knows, maybe work it into a show. In the meantime, check out Eastwood on Facebook and on the Eastwood.com website, and keep on pursuing your passion, whatever it is. I'm Kevin Tates, and this is Shop Talk. Do the job right with Eastwood. In the meantime, check out everything at the Eastwood.com website. Eastwood has what it takes to do the job right. And you know me, I like to do the job right. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk. I'm Kevin Tates.